MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
What's up, Open Floor? This is Ben Galber with the Washington Post. I am joined on the other line by Michael the Pod Pina. And guess what, Michael? I cannot handle another MVP conversation. It's just everywhere all the time. To me, the answer is obvious. It's Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets. If you don't agree, well, maybe save it for a couple weeks, Michael, because I don't want to hear it right now. It's just been too much of that everywhere. So here's how I want to flip it, and tell me if you're with me on this. Let's dig into our imagination side of our brain a little bit. Let's get a little bit wacky. Let's try to channel that Oracle from Oregon energy that I used to predict the James Harden trade to the Brooklyn Nets months in advance, and that you used to predict Steph Curry was going to be entertaining this year before the season, your proudest achievement and prediction, and I'm very happy for you. Let's use that energy to forecast the 2026 NBA MVP race. So, Michael, this is standing up for all time. These are the predictions that are really going to matter. I want you to look 5 years into the future and tell me who's going to be at the top of the MVP list. And before I get your names, I want to know, what was your process in kind of coming to this exercise? What factors did you consider? Were you looking at ages? Were you looking at positions potentially that might be more or less valuable down the road? What was your thought process like?
So, I don't know if I had, I don't know if I can really describe my thought process. I guess what I was trying to do is obviously look at my first thought was just to look at the best young players in the league, and everyone kind of knows who they are. And then what I did was, I looked at the list of every single winner for MVP in NBA history, and I categorized them by age to see which age has won the most MVPs.
So I love this already, because I assign you homework, and you really do dive in deep to it. All right, so do you get like an average? Are you going to give us a mean here on the average years of experience and average height and average age of each MVP winner from all time? Or what were you looking for as you were doing this?
So I basically stuck to age. I wasn't able to kind of dig that deep into the weeds and get like wingspan and vertical leap. That wasn't available to me. But age, I feel like, is a pretty good predictor enough. And there are obviously some very talented players who will be in that age range. The other thing that I tried to figure out, which is just beyond impossible, is how good that these players' teams will be in 5 years. I mean, I can't tell how good they're going to be in a week, so 5 years is just virtually impossible, let alone like what team they'll be on.
Totally. So that I left that completely out. I'm right there with you because, you know, these teams are operating right now really on like 1 year cycles, you know what I mean? And Stars are kind of operating in a 2 year mentality where, okay, I want to get someplace, team up with some guys for a couple years. If it doesn't work, I want to move on. So I disregarded the team context pretty much entirely. The only exception there was if guys were on rookie deals and I felt comfortable they would still be there, right? So a classic case there would be like Zion or Luka. I'm quite confident 2026, those guys are still going to be in their respective home markets where they are right now. And so, you know, that was a little bit different. But if we're talking about a little bit older players, you know, say a guy like Anthony Davis, you know, who knows? I mean, we would assume that he would probably stay in LA for a long time. That's going to be a nice landing spot for him. But it wouldn't be crazy if he gets to, you know, 31, 32, and there's another chapter for him like there has been for players like KD and LeBron along the way. So far, you're speaking my language almost brilliantly. I'm curious on the age part, did you have a cutoff or a target zone? I mean, I think this award has become so stats-focused, right, that guys sort of in their mid to late 20s might have an advantage here, right, in that 25 to 27 window, or maybe even a little bit younger if you're looking back on Giannis. But I don't think that means that other players need to be, you know, cast aside, right? I mean, you can see some guys who are 30, 31, 32 and still in the mix. How much did that weigh? Like, what was your target framework here when you're saying you looked at younger players?
Yeah, so I mean, I organized everyone by age, and I'm looking at my list right now. There's about 16 or 17 names on my list, and I'm obviously leaving a ton of people off, so like apologies to them, and I don't want everyone to get angry at me, but there's only four players on my list who are 30 or older.
Fascinating. Well, that's probably even more than I would have had. So who are those four? Who are the guys who are going to sneak in and win a career achievement MVP in 2026?
Okay, so you already said AD. He'll be 33 in 2026, and there's only been one 33-year-old, one 34-year-old, and one 35-year-old. The oldest MVP in NBA history is Karl Malone at 35. In 1999.
That was Mike's award, by the way. I mean, they gave it to Carl. It's like in Carl's garage, but come on. I mean, give me a break. You know, sure. So that just proves your point of how hard it is to do that, you know, in those kinds of situations. Can I just say on AD really quickly, he came in so young and he was so much younger than like all the guys. Remember that Olympic team where he was like, there was guys who were like twice as old as he was practically. And I mean, he wasn't quite the towel guy, but he was sort of the towel guy on that team. I actually think that his MVP odds are going to be really strong as he gets closer to 30 and even beyond, because a lot of those guys who were on that team have already retired, but there's a whole nother wave of them who are eventually going to hit the kind of decline phase, right? You know, LeBron, Kevin Durant, I mean, those types of players, that generation will at some point no longer be in MVP conversations. And so I think even though AD hasn't come all that close to winning one yet, and obviously he wasn't a candidate at all this year because of the injury, I think he's got a really good chance to get one, if not, you know, two, maybe even more as he gets closer to 30. Am I overstating it?
No, I think AD is one of the more, you know, because of the injury, he's one of the more underrated players in the league. I mean, coming out of the bubble, I thought he was the best player in the world. And, you know, coming out of an offseason that had never been shorter, I think that did a lot of damage, obviously, to him in a lot of ways. And, like, this should have been his MVP season. And if the world were normal, this would have been his MVP campaign where he could have just rolled through and just dominated the league. That's what I think. You know, there's an alternate timeline where I think that would be possible. I mean, he's 28 years old. This is the year like when a lot of guys historically really get to that level, and he was clearly talented enough. He's coming off, you know, the year where he would have been the most valuable player, I think, in the playoffs, him or LeBron, and he was just incredible. So he would, like, if he were healthy this year and he had a normal offseason to rest, he would have been a defensive player of the year candidate. He would have averaged like 29, 12, and 6 or something crazy like that. Like, he would have been incredible. So
your argument here is buy in AD stock for MVP next year, because if he does get a real offseason, you know, he's a very undervalued stock. I love that argument. Sure. There's going to be another potential MVP year for AD coming down the pipeline, Michael. When LeBron and Bronny team up on the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Lakers are going to be AD's team. If he leads them to 50 wins in that first post-LeBron year, watch out.
Yeah, see, that I tried to factor in, this is going back to, like, the team success, and I you know, the Lakers post-LeBron are going to be just, they're going to be terrible. I'm sorry. It's just, they are. No draft picks, no LeBron. It's going to be very ugly.
Well, I love how we made it 8 minutes into an episode about MVPs 5 years from now, and you cannot control your anti-Lakers screeds. I love it. So, 80 was one of the older guys on your list, but who were the over 30 guys? Who else did you have there?
So I have Jokic, just because, like, I figure his game will age very well. It's not based on athleticism at all. And
okay, so to clarify, you're saying over 30 in 2026, not over 30 now. Okay, I was gonna say, if you had any players who are over 30 now who you still think are gonna be hanging on, that would be pretty wild. Although, should we count LeBron out here? Should he be a candidate? Is it crazy?
It is. I'm going to say, you know, I think it is. Yeah. 40-year-old LeBron, I don't think, is going to win MVP.
Well, we'll see. It could be, you know, the conclusion of a three-peat with Bronny. It's going to be a hard narrative to say no to, Michael. We never know. No, I'm with you. What about KD? Any consideration to guys like him or Steph, or you're just saying there's no way?
No.
They're too old?
No. AD, who is 28 now, was actually my oldest player.
Wow. Okay. So,
I don't know if I'm missing anybody, but I just couldn't see anyone, given the crop of young talent and how I think they'll evolve and develop. I just don't see anyone who's 30 now winning MVP as those guys hit their prime.
Fair enough. I mean, I would, you know, kind of as a counterpoint, like, look what Steph's doing this year with his crazy numbers, right? And he's, you know, well past 30 in a different universe where Klay's healthy. I think Steph could have won MVP this year. And so that's what brought me back to a player like Anthony Davis, where don't write him off because he's in his prime now and just assume 5 years from now he's not still going to be there. There is a cutoff, and I'm with you. You know, some of these guys who are over 30 now probably deserve to be on the cutting room floor outside looking in. But I do think, you know, AD is a great example, and Jokic is a great example too. So who are the other two that you had?
So I have Giannis, and he'll be 31 in 5 years, and you know, a lot can happen between now and then. I think he would have to. Would you say he would have to win the title to win another regular season MVP?
No, but it would make it a lot easier, right? You know, yeah. I do think if we fast forward 3 or 4 years, the narratives, you know, get recycled and cleansed. If he had a new coach and they were off, you know, with the number one record in the league, and he's putting up, you know, again, monster stats like always, staying perfectly healthy like he usually does, I could see him getting another one. But it does get tougher, you know, because I think voters hold you to a higher standard, because at that point you're like in the Larry Bird conversation and with some of these other guys in terms of how many total career MVPs you have, and people get a little bit squirrely about that if you haven't won. So, you know, it would be a higher hill, but, you know, I could see a year where he's like 30 entering the season, it's him versus Luka. Maybe Luka misses 15 games and people are like, all right, Giannis, you know, kind of by default, you win it, you know?
So the other thing with Giannis is he still has that void in his game with the outside shot. So, like, I could see a world where in 5 years, all of a sudden, he has the three-point shot and he's everything that we kind of imagine he can be still. So that's like the Giannis argument, I guess. And also, he's a two-time winner already and an incredible player.
I love your optimism. I worry kind of the other way. You know, I do wonder how will Giannis's offensive game age. And I do hope, you know, at some point it's probably going to be more mid-range turnarounds, right? It's going to be more post-up moves probably. I think at some point he will transition full-time to center from a defensive standpoint. And so that could help him. But, you know, what we've seen with some of these players has been real evolution in their games. Like LeBron's a totally different player, offensive threat now than he was even like 5, 6, 7 years ago. I mean, he really upped his three-point rate, relies on it way more heavily and everything else. And I don't totally know if Giannis is going to get there. I mean, I was bought in there until basically the last 9 months, and then now my confidence in him is wavering. But I don't want to write him off either, because the physical tools are still going to be there. He's going to be able to overpower a lot of people for a long time. And I think certainly until he's like 30 or 31 with no real issues there. So he'll be in the mix. Yeah. Who was the last one?
So this one is a little controversial, but I went with Karl Anthony Towns.
Oh, thank God. I thought you were going to say Zach LaVine. Okay. Make the case for Karl Anthony Towns.
He's extremely good. That's number one. Number two, so he'll be 30. When I watch Cat, I think about like a few years ago when he's just got the world in front of him and he's, you know, basically nearing 50, 40, 90. He's coming off pin downs to hit threes, something he still does, by the way. I still think about that game. It's one game, and obviously his reputation on the defensive end has really taken a hit over the past few years. But I just remember one game against like the peak Warriors. I think it was either 2015 or 2016, where he's switching screens out on Steph Curry and hanging with him in ISO coverage, like 30 feet from the basket, and just moving his feet, looking great. Like, I know that that Karl Anthony Towns is not going to be what Karl Anthony Towns looks like when he's 30, but it just kind of speaks to how awesome he is. And like, if he's ever on a team, and I don't think that I can blame a lot of the Timberwolves struggles on him. I know he catches a lot of flack for it, but like, in 5 years, if he's not in Minnesota, or if Minnesota ever gets things right and surrounds him with, you know, if Anthony Edwards turns into this incredible phenom and they're like a really dynamic 1-2 punch, like I could just see Karl Anthony Towns in a winning environment and everyone's like, whoa, he is really good. So I just don't want to sleep on him.
It's an interesting nomination. I like how you sold it, but you didn't sell me, Michael. I'm walking away from your stall with my money in my pocket. Here's why. We've seen it so hard for big guys to get into this conversation. That's why this year's race is so fascinating, because, you know, we haven't had big guys in this mix since like prime Dwight, and nobody's won it since Shaq, right? That's a long time in NBA history or style of play history. And I think the bigs who are more likely to be the most effective in 2026 are the Anthony Davis, Bam Adebayo, Evan Mobley, mold type bigs. Like, I don't see some drastic rule change coming down the pipeline where three-pointers are no longer nearly as important and, you know, you don't need the versatility on that side, the defensive side, from your bigs. I think those guys are just going to have a premium here for a while. And I am just out on Cat the defender. I just am. And are you with me there? I mean, it's like a lot of your argument was based on this idea that like he could be the most skilled offensive big in the game and he's going to be able to shoot crazy. But is he going to be able to do it both ways where that doesn't hold him back? And I just wonder if he's ever going to get there.
Well, I mean, I think we're in agreement that Jokic is going to win MVP this year.
Like, we are. I was adamant about that at the top. Jokic is a way better defender than Cat.
Okay. I don't think that it's impossible for Cat to ever get as good. And you can make an argument about, you know, will Cat ever be as good offensively as Jokic has been this season? That's a different conversation. But
also a no.
but defensively, I would say that Cat can definitely get to the level that Jokic has been at this season. There's no question in my mind. So I also do think that he'll never be the passer that Jokic is. Of course, no big probably ever will be as long as we're living. But as a scorer and as a 3-point shooter, like I just feel like there's more for him to tap there. Like if he's ever launching 12 threes a game, I just feel like his numbers could be just astronomical.
Well argued. I mean, look, if he's like a top three scorer in the league and he's playing for like a top three seed in the league, like in the conference, I mm-hmm. think he's going to have a case. That's definitely, you know, even if he's just average defensively in that scenario, that's a case that will keep him in the mix. I'm just not totally convinced he's going to be able to get there and win at that high of a level. Mm-hmm. And be able to, you know, overcome this like kind of anti-big bias that's baked into the results. You know, we've seen it for 10 or 15 years now. I mean, the forwards and the wings and then, you know, occasionally guards are dominating this award. I think it's just easier to get attention. It's easier to build narratives. You know, the ability to set your teammates up as a playmaker has been really, really important in recent MVP conversations, including for Giannis. You know, his passing was a big part of my argument for him, both MVP years. It's not the most beautiful thing in the world. He's not as good of a passer as a James Harden, but his passing creates so much offense for his teammates. It's like kind of undeniable. You've got to start the offense, just not finish it. And I think that could mm-hmm. be what comes back to bite Kat. But I like the fact that you're being generous and keeping him in here. Okay, so we know who your older candidates are. Let's twist this conversation slightly, and I want to know, like, who are you most confident in is going to be the 2026 NBA MVP? Like, if I said you've got to go to Vegas or, you know, whatever place is, like, mm-hmm. degenerate enough to take futures bets 5 years in advance, who are you laying your mortgage on and sleeping okay at night?
If I
your wife's yeah. not listening here.
No, she's absolutely not. The answer to me, and I don't think it'll surprise you, is Zion Williamson.
Okay, whew, we dodged a bullet there because I thought you were going to go Jason Tatum, and I was going to have to pull what little hair I have out of my head. Zion's got to be on the near the top of the list. He's not my number one selection. That probably doesn't surprise you either. But why Zion?
Mm-hmm. Well, picturing, I just don't know, like, what the case is against Zion. That's kind of where I start with him. So he'll be 25 years old in 2026. And
what does his stat line look like that year? I mean, I'm going to give him perfect health. Are we talking like 32-16?
It's so scary. It's just like he's going to be surrounded by three-point shooting by then. And if he's not, then just I don't even know what to say. It's a crime against humanity if he's not by then. 32-16, sure. Like, you tell me literally anything and I'll believe it with Zion.
I thought you were going to gasp when I said that. Nope, you just took it and rolled with it.
No, I mean, everything he's doing is already historic. Everybody knows he wants to shoot in the paint, and he does it efficiently, and he gets to the free throw line. He probably gets fouled a few more times per game that's not called. And I don't really know. He's doing it with Steven Adams at the five. He's doing it with, like, really sometimes really funky lineups that are huge. He's already playing point guard. He's going to develop a jump shot eventually. He's already a really good passer. The defense is going to get better. The Pelicans are set up for the future and all the draft picks that they have. It's Zion for me. Easy.
Do you want to know what I want to have happen between now and 2026 when it comes to Zion? I want the resurrection of, like, the guys who would come and just hack Shaq, you know, like the giant guys who had absolutely no basketball
Scott
skill
Pollard.
Whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah, those guys, they would just come in and their whole job was to just hack Shaq, right? But I want a modern twist on it. So I want the guys who are supposed to be able to kind of match up with Zion, like the Grant Williamses of the world. I want those guys to go on, like, the anti-Zion diet where, like, you know, Danny Ainge, like, you know, brings him in during the offseason and, like, he's sitting around a table with the health and conditioning coach and they're like, Grant, we're going to try to add 75 pounds to your frame this summer. Are you up for it? Like, this is all geared towards a potential, you know, finals matchup against Zion. We've got to have you as our X factor here. And so we have these guys who just come back as like 320-pound monsters designed solely to make Zion's life more difficult. Yeah, good luck trying to pirouette around a guy who takes up the entire paint. What do you think of this strategy?
So just like putting a plate of or multiple plates of Oreos and just having and like a stopwatch and having Grant Williams eat all of them in under 35 seconds. That's basically the is that the new strategy for the Boston Celtics? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, what we're going to be doing is we're going to go dig out all those long form Sports Illustrated stories about the University of Wisconsin's offensive line and like how they really beef those guys up in advance of the Big Ten schedule. And we're going to have that for, you know, like two or three guys on each team's front line. It's not just a Celtics thing. I just think that he's like probably the most primed and conditioned body-wise to be willing to take on this challenge. I just hope NBA executives are on my level right now. This is some real Oracle stuff, and I think that we're going to need some body adjustments if anybody's going to slow him down.
It's genius. It's brilliant. The only thing that concerns me with Zion is his health. That's really it. Like, It's something I don't even want to talk about because it would be the biggest bummer of all time. But if Zion is hurt and suffers a serious injury, which, you know, that was a big concern last year for us. We had several conversations about it. I don't think it will be an issue because I just think that as he ages, he'll just get in better shape. That's kind of what happens historically with really good players who enter the league and they aren't in peak physical condition. I mean, just look at like a photograph of Kevin Love when he first entered the league versus what he looked like 5 years ago. It's ridiculous. So, you know, it's possible given just the unprecedentedness of his body and his speed and all of that. But I really hope it doesn't happen.
I hope it doesn't happen too. I also hope that you don't get your feelings hurt when I tell you you're wrong again here with this pick. It's got to be Luka, man. I mean, it really does have to be Luka. Age 21 season right now, he's averaging 29-8-9. He's led high-level offenses without all that much help. He plays a style of play I think that's going to age brilliantly for him his entire career because he's so crafty. He can get to his spots. He can get shots anywhere he wants. He's got vision that will be with him for the rest of his life. I think by 2026, we could be talking about Luka's second or third MVP. He's going to be right smack in his prime. They'll have years to get help around him. I anticipate he will still be in Dallas kind of as that franchise linchpin. I do think, you know, he's still a little bit polarizing because of the whining and everything else, but I think as some of these older stars fade out a little bit, it's going to become Luka's league. He's going to be the shining star of the whole league, and it's going to be one of those things where, like, maybe it gets shoved down everybody's throat like a little bit too much and a little bit uncomfortably, but I do feel like if anyone is going to carry the mantle of like some of the stuff LeBron's had to deal with as like the face of the sport, I feel like it's trending Luka's direction, and he's going to be one of those guys that just comes into every season with this massive narrative advantage because of his fame and international popularity. And I wouldn't want to have to be on Team Zion against that kind of a monster in Luka Doncic.
So Luka's my number two.
Okay, so you were close. You almost got it.
Yeah. I don't have a big beef with this pick at all. I mean, it's a coin flip, but when I think about Luka in this conversation, there's a couple things that are why I had him number two.
Ooh, and I love it. Here comes the nitpicking, fresh off of like a 45-point victory over your Golden State Warriors. Let's hear this, Michael.
Well, first of all, I have 3 points. Number one, statistically, like, how much better can Luka get, would you say? Like,
I think he's got some room, for sure. I do. I mean, I know he came in early, and you could make the peaked early argument, but...
I'm not doing that, by the way, but yeah, I'm just wondering, throwing it out there.
I think he can be a better three-point shooter. I think he can have better shot selection on his threes. I think that, you know, he's not getting to the free throw line this year as much as he did last year, and I could see him getting even, you know, to the line even more as he gets older. Your point on Zion's conditioning and body going forward, I think, also applies to Luka. I'm not convinced we've seen Luka in peak condition
yet.
Great
point. Great point.
So if he comes back, svelte Luka, you know, international sex symbol, ready to take over the NBA at age 26, right? Or like he has one of those LeBron-like situations where some crazy postseason defeat, like in LeBron's case, it was the 2011 finals, and he just locks himself inside for 2 months and just ponders, like, who do I want to be as a person? Like, if Luka has one of those crossroads moments, I fear for everybody because I do think he's leaving stuff on the table right now.
No, that's all really well put and hard to argue with. I think, you know, this is kind of a cheap point to make in kind of disparaging Luka's case, but like, is there a possibility, you know, we're talking about the year 2026 specifically, is there a possibility where Luka wins two MVPs or an MVP or whatever before 2026?
Oh, that's a great argument.
And then struggles in the playoffs, a la Giannis Antetokounmpo, and no one is going to vote for him when he's in his age 26, 27 season.
This is why we do the brainstorms. Brilliant point. I hadn't thought about that. He's already phased out of his MVP era by 2026. It's absolutely a concern for him, given how high he's peaked already. I mean, I think he'll probably enter next season as a top three MVP candidate again, don't you think? Just because people will assume he's going to have giant numbers and stay healthy because he's young.
Yeah, he was the favorite. He was the odds-on favorite in Vegas, correct me if I'm wrong, heading into this season, wasn't he? So
for sure, and I think he's going to be back as top three again next year. And so, you know, it very well, if his clock is already starting, maybe he does advance too quickly for that 2026 window. That's wild to think about. Boy. All right. Well, who else do you have here in your top five mix? You've gone Zion, Luka. It's got to be Tatum next, I would imagine, for you.
It is Tatum.
Yeah.
It's Tatum.
So let me ask you this. There's been a, real quick, just to frame it, there's been a lot of discussion Tatum versus Jaylen this year, right? And I think it's just because there hasn't been anything else to talk about. The Celtics all too painful for you guys this year. Why does Tatum have more MVP potential than Brown? If we could say Brown has arguably had a better season than Tatum this year, I might even still take Tatum's season this year, honestly, but some people might say Brown's a better player right now or has had the better season. Why does Tatum have more upside and ceiling?
Man, like, it's kind of just like a weird question to answer. Like, Tatum's just better. Like, there's just a lot of reasons for it. I think he's a better the Celtics just always function in a more winning capacity when Tatum's on the floor versus when Jaylen's on the floor. Tatum has better vision. Tatum can get any shot he wants efficiently. Well, not this season that much, but any shot he really wants, including really ridiculously hard sidestep threes, step back threes. I think in the long term, Tatum is just going to be an absolute foul magnet, and he'll live at the free throw line. He hasn't really gotten there yet, but you see it. You see him kind of inching along and progressing in that part of his game. He's a better rebounder. I forget if I already said if he's a better defender. And he's just got like at the end of a, I mean, I it's tough to like, I'm not, I don't mean to criticize Jaylen, but like at the end of a game, if you need a bucket, Tatum is in my top five of guys who I can just give the ball, know he's going to get a shot that he's comfortable with taking from wherever, and feel pretty good about it going in. So, yeah, Tatum's just like a better player, and he's a year younger too.
Yeah, I agree with basically all of that. I think there's a stylistic difference. I think that there's like a little scrap to Jaylen Brown that earns him a lot of fans, and rightfully so. You know, he'll get up under people on ball and be a little bit more physical and we see his work, and I think that, you know, Tatum, don't penalize him because he makes it look easy, right? I mean, he kind of does make it look a little bit easier on both sides. He creates shots more easily. And then defensively, I think he's really good off ball and, you know, and just a good overall team system defender. And it's maybe just not quite as easy to see as, you know, when Jaylen's like really getting after a ball handler or something like that. I would also take Tatum over Jaylen in this kind of a conversation. Whether Jaylen has MVP potential is an interesting question. I would say no. What about you?
He did not make my list of even like honorable mentions. And I think part of that is because honestly, he's Tatum's teammate. Like, I think that, you know, obviously he could go to a different team in 5 years, who knows, but that's a factor. And then also it's just like, not everyone can contend for MVP. Like, just because you're an all-star doesn't mean that, you know, you have MVP and an MVP in your future. So, like, again, no disrespect to Jaylen, one of my favorite players, improves every season. Sky's the limit for him in a lot of ways. I just don't see MVP necessarily in his crosshairs.
So here's the tricky part for Tatum. Does he pass the ball and play make enough for his teammates to be viewed as the same type of overall offensive impact-making guy, even compared to Zion and Luka, right? I mean, I think the best comp for a Tatum MVP would probably be Kevin Durant's MVP season, right? Where he had to just step up and kind of do a little bit of everything. I mean, looking back at his stats on Basketball Reference, I mean, KD averaged more than 5 assists per game. He's kind of, you know, playing at times sort of like a lead playmaker, even if it's not the same deal as a LeBron or a James Harden. Like, he's got his fingerprints all over the offense. He's not just a scorer. I could see Tatum averaging 32, just like KD did in his MVP season. I'm curious, is he going to get the credit as that all-around offensive weapon, though? Could that be something that holds him back?
Maybe. I mean, I think his game is going to develop like all around in a really balanced way. And I mean, look, if you're averaging over 30 a game and your team is good, and I think the Celtics will be good throughout the life of Tatum's contract and the next 5 years, then you're going to be an MVP candidate. So I don't think it'll hurt him too much now.
Yeah. And he's been on the rise here. I mean, I think he's up to a career high 4 assists this year. You know, it probably, you know, I still want more when I watch him play. I still feel like it's too much pound. It's too much individual stuff, but he's getting there. The free throw stuff, absolutely. He needs to really kickstart that into gear. Otherwise, I think he kind of plateaus into more of like the Kawhi Leonard, Paul George category, where, you know, he's going to be in the mix, but maybe he doesn't actually win one.
Check the backseat. Check the backseat.
All right. Come here.
Check the backseat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the backseat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, who is your... I think we're down to what, number 4 on your list?
Yes. So you're going to hate this. Oh, I know no. You are.
Oh, no.
And we can, you know, after I give my top five, we can debate a few other names if we want, if you don't have to, you know, grab a late lunch or anything like that.
You already promised 18 names, Michael, so we're in for the long haul.
Okay, good. So this is tough, and, you know, I have a case for it, and I will support it with my case after I say the name, but the name is Trae Young.
Look, there's a case. I considered him too. It's interesting because, like, I feel like he still has that ceiling potential that makes it plausible. And compared to a lot of his age peers, I do think he has a higher ceiling, like best case scenario, than a lot of those guys, even though I think his like current baseline is maybe lower than some other players that, you know, he gets more attention than he maybe deserves relative to some of his peers. But I don't hate this one, Michael. I don't love it, but I don't hate it.
Oh, wow. I'm surprised. So the case for Trae Young is, you know, I went at the very beginning of this conversation, I talked about how I kind of categorized every single MVP winner by age. And so guys who are going to be 27 and 28, that's kind of like 27, 28. Yeah, that's the sweet spot. So 27-year-olds, 10 have won the MVP. That's higher than any other age group. 28, 9 have won. That's second highest. And so that was really, you know, I'm being a little more biased, but that's like where guys hit their prime and hit their stride. And when I also look at, you know, I'm comparing Trae statistically right now in a season that's been like, you know, people are pretty down, I would say, on the fact that he hasn't made any notable strides statistically. But statistically, he's very good. I mean, he's like first or second in this age group among everybody, and first or second in points, first or second in or third in assists, and basically has the same true shooting percentage or a very similar one as Luka. He's still really good offensively, and his team is potentially going to have home court in the first round of the playoffs this season, and trying to kind of, you know, again, really hard to look out 5 years in the NBA and know what you're talking about. But I like what the Hawks are building. And if he stays in Atlanta, I like it a lot. I think they'll be really good for a long time. They have a lot of good pieces. They have a smart front office. And everyone's kind of on his timeline, or a majority of the pieces that are important are on his timeline. So Trae, if he's averaging, you know, if he ups the 3-point shooting by then, which he should, that's like what he should be working on day and night every offseason. If he ups the 3-point accuracy, and, you know, I could see a 30-plus point average season with
for sure.
Over 10 assists.
No, you're right on. I mean, I was going to say 30-10 on a top 3 seed in the East, where they've constructed a team that's like pretty good defensively to cover him up, so it doesn't matter as much. And then he's just kind of going wild, and, you know, it's the Trae Young show on offense, and he's settled into his groove, and, you know, he knows how to make his teammates better at that point, and he's making better shot selection decisions, and you know, cutting out some of the fat from his diet in terms of where he's shooting from. It's definitely mm-hmm. plausible. And I do think when you're comparing him to some of the other young point guards, I think that the statistical accumulation thing does matter, right? I think he's just going to put up bigger numbers more easily than a player like a Ja Morant, or even than a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, or potentially even than a LaMelo Ball. And I think those guys are kind of sort of aged together and always be kind of compared to each other. And maybe I'm leaving out a few people, but I think that Trae's just ability to accumulate stats will help him in this conversation in a ways that not very many others besides like Luka could really count on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. He's going to have stats in his favor, and I think he'll have the wins too to back it up. And I assumed it was you were going to be a little down, because when/if Trae ever gets into this discussion on a serious level, I think defense will be the big, you know, that's what people will point at and people will criticize. But like I just foresee him having really special offensive seasons. And by the way, Steve Nash is a 2-time MVP.
Yeah, great point. And also, I mean, we saw Steph win MVPs, Harden win MVPs, where that's not the crux of their case, right? I mean, the thing is, can you play defense well enough, or is your defense not damaging to the point where it doesn't stand in the way of your team's success, right? If Atlanta's winning 55 games, I don't think people are going to care that much about defense unless it turns into some sort of, like, you know, a final head-to-head argument between him and someone else as like a tiebreaker. But it's not going to be a complete deal breaker from the top where it's like, oh, we can't give it to him because the defense is so terrible. Like, Peak Trey, if he's averaging 30 and 10, is going to get a pass from a lot of voters when it comes to that stuff, because we've already seen him get passes from fans for that in all-star voting and other kinds of recognitions here along the way. I think that's just natural. You watch the game evolve even more towards offense here recently. It's kind of heading in his direction. Both him and Luke, I think, are very well positioned as player types to take advantage of where the game is going from a statistical standpoint. And so I think he has to be on this list. I like it, even though I think that of all the names we've mentioned, he has by far the most approved to me. All right, let's round this out. Your top five, number five, in the MVP of 2026 conversation is?
Bam Adebayo.
Well, you snub Anthony Davis, so thanks a lot for that. How do you possibly put Bam over AD, Michael?
So Bam is going to be 28 years old, and AD is going to be 33 years old. That's how I do that. But I love Bam. I wrote about him on SI.com today. We're recording this on a Wednesday. I wrote about his defense and the fact that, you know, he's not going. This has been really confusing for people on Twitter in my mentions, but it's not that confusing, I hope. But, like, Bam is not going to win Defensive Player of the Year because of Rudy Gobert's season. Like, Rudy Gobert is just kind of strolling away with that award, and that's fine. He's had a wonderful season. But Bam is so, like, if I needed to get a stop, or if I had a game seven and I could have one player alive to just fortify my defense and, like, switch like crazy, blitz, protect the rim, rebound, do everything, it's Bam. Like, Bam's the best defender to me. And it's really difficult to kind of disentangle that from Defensive Player of the Year. And I think that's getting some people caught up or hung up a little bit. But I hope you understand what I'm trying to say. And offensively, every year,
don't pander to me, Michael. Don't pander to me and try to say, oh, you're so much smarter than the people who are yelling at me on Twitter. I see what you're doing here, trying to drive a wedge in between the listeners and myself. Come on now.
I'm doing no such thing.
I know. But I'm teasing. Well, here, look. Here's the archetype. It's KG's MVP, right?
Oh, man. I don't want to compare anyone to KG, but that's kind of, yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you've got the playmaking out of the big. You've got the guy who can get the buckets when he wants and will get scoring numbers, but that's not really, like, his prerogative on the court on a night-to-night basis. And then you just have the all-universe defense and just, like, the guy impacts winning like nobody's business. So I can't say enough things about Bam, and I love how he gets better on both ends every single season. That's why I'm so high on him as a 28-year-old when, you know, he's probably going to have a three-point shot by then, which is terrifying. Like, yeah, I gotta put him here.
I got to put him here, and I also got to let him know, go team up with Luka, man. Go win yourself some title. Really get some notoriety, because here's what I think holds him back. I love this case, and he was on my top five list as well. You know, he's not that far away from averaging 20, 10, and 5. That's ridiculous. Plus a steal and a block, that doesn't happen very often in NBA history. He's going to be able to do that for a while, because it's not like he's playing that many crazy minutes right now, because he's going to continue to get better. And because he's already made so much improvement here while he's been in the NBA. So he's still got a lot of untapped potential we haven't seen. Statistically, could he get to 23, 10, and 5? Yes, absolutely. I think the problem is, and we're seeing it this year with Miami, you know, when you're, it's really hard to have a good offense if your big man isn't like a Jokic-level playmaker for others, or like a 30-point-per-game scorer, right? Like, if your big is kind of either part of a system, or he's a little bit derivative, or he's relying upon other lead ball handlers, that doesn't always translate to super efficient offense these days, and also doesn't necessarily translate to wins. And so I think he's going to have the right partner or the right core group around him, where his case is, I am the best defensive player in the year, but I can also put up 20 points and I make my teammates better and I do all the little things. I think it's going to have to be a really comprehensive argument for him to actually get this thing done. And that's why, you know, KG walks away. He doesn't have five MVPs, right? I mean, everything had to sort of break almost perfectly for him to get his recognition. So I think it's going to be challenging. He's going to have to sort of thread the needle a little bit here, but he's absolutely in the mix. And this wasn't to pick on Bam either. AD faces the same challenges, right? There was a lot of years where he's playing individually at his spot, like an MVP level player in New Orleans, but they're not winning games because success is you know, needing to run more through the backcourt than was capable of that at that point. So unless we start to see point Bam, you know, where like he's doing all sorts of crazy stuff like Zion, I think that part will hold him back a little bit as we go forward. But I'm with you in terms of his defensive ceiling. Mm-hmm. How many Defensive Player of the Year awards do you think he's going to have when he retires? Like over under. Wow.
Over under. If you said to me, I mean, if you said to me 1.5, I might take the over.
I was going to go 2.5 as my line.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, well, three
from an age perspective, that's, you know,
like, yeah.
And I think people get bored on the Defensive Player of the Year picks too, you know? Like, I don't think there's like a rush of excitement to give it to Rudy Gobert again. And if the Jazz were the third seed, I don't think he would necessarily even be the leading candidate. Embiid's going to be in that mix. AD's going to be in the mix, but he's going to have a nice window, I think Bam is, because Zion's never going to be Defensive Player of the Year. Luka's never going to be Defensive Player of the Year. Trey doesn't even know that award exists. I mean, a lot of these other names that we've been mentioning, you know, aren't going to even be close to that conversation. So he's going to have a little leg up, I guess.
Yeah, no, you do make a good point there. I mean, Rudy's not super. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, I don't understand why voter fatigue for Defensive Player of the Year doesn't really exist, but it does exist for MVP. Maybe, I mean, I guess I do know it's because no one cares about one versus the other, but yeah, no, you do make a good point. And then circling back real quick about like how good the Heat will be going forward with Bam as the number one guy, because that's going to be the future here, right? Like Jimmy's not going to be around forever. And it's going to be really fascinating to see. You know, I think a lot is hinging on Tyler Hero's development, and he's had a down sophomore season with the Heat. But it's going to be really interesting to see just, you know, how they build and retool when Jimmy has moved on. That's what I'm really looking forward to seeing.
So I'd like to talk about the blind spots in your list now, if that's okay.
Let's do it.
Did you forget about my guy Ja Morant with the Memphis Grizzlies? The archetype there is obviously young Derrick Rose. Ja Morant, I think, is the coolest player in the NBA. Would you like to make a counter argument for anyone?
Do you want me to name someone who's cooler than Ja Morant?
Yeah, I mean, look, I have no idea what you would consider to be cool out there in Brooklyn. You know, hit Bayless himself. I'd question what you might consider cool or not cool. I think Ja Morant's the coolest player in the NBA, isn't he?
Ja is very cool, very authentic. I would say, you know, point blank, Dame is the coolest player in the NBA.
Are you sure?
I am sure, but, you know, this is extremely subjective. So Ja is not a loser. He is cool. And I admire his approach on and off the court to everything that he does.
Yeah, he's actually on the other line right now. He's thanking me for you vouching him for him publicly. He needed that so much. Yeah, look, I mean, we're not the greatest arbiters here. You'd have him top five of cool, though, right?
He's top five cool. He's
cooler
even
than Trey, right?
He's I don't know.
I mean, I think it's an important point here on Ja, and I'm being a little bit facetious, but I do kind of mean this. He's cooler than Trey. I would say he's flat out cooler than Luka. I like Luka a lot. Luka's definitely a better player. He's cooler than Luka. He's definitely cooler than Tatum. No disrespect. I like where Tatum is going with some of his advertising campaigns, like very polished. Like it fits him, right? He's being true to himself. But I think that Ja is the kind of guy who just gets people excited in a different way and gets people rooting for him and kind of cheering for him and wanting to be like on team Ja. He just has that magnetism to him. And I still think he's a little bit of an under-the-radar story nationally on that stuff because he plays in Memphis, because he's had some injury issues and all of that. But I can absolutely see him grabbing hearts and minds like Derrick Rose did. You know, like if they go on a real run, they get a 50-win season, he wins a first-round playoff series, he's going 2010, heads up against whoever it might be in a first-round playoff series. Ja has massive, massive, massive superstar potential, and that's where I'm saying he could kind of do what D. Rose did potentially and just sneak one out based on the aura, but also the game, and also just his awesome personality, and he's a great leader too.
I love Ja Moran. I have nothing super terrible to say about him, but I don't think he's – I'm about to say something that's going to insult you, but I don't think he's good enough to win MVP. That's
wow.
Just,
oh, man. Can we please contact Grit and Grind Media? I know they're out there listening. Write this down. Let's get this quote from Michael Pena. Let's put this on a whiteboard for Ja Morant. This is the motivation that he needs to take it to that MVP level, Michael. Ja, I believe in you.
I mean – it's not like I was expecting him to be an all-star already, like in his second season, but are we like, are we just penciling him in to even be an all-star over the next 3 years?
Michael, stop slandering this poor man. Of course he's going to be an all-star. This guy's great.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I would say lead ball handlers who are his size, who are so reliant on athleticism, who have no outside shot. I don't know, man. And he's not even averaging over 20 points per game. And I can't get there. I'm sorry. And I feel like I'm being very negative.
You are being very negative, and it is hurting my feelings, actually, as a matter of fact. You need to trust the Oracle on this one, Michael. I can see the future.
Okay.
Your point on the health thing is right on. I don't see him ever being like a multi MVP guy. Like if he wins one, he's going to kind of sneak it out in very like Derrick Rose or Russell Westbrook fashion, and everyone's going to know when he gets it. Like this is probably the only one. It's more about the intangibles to me. I think that he really gets the best out of his team. You know, Memphis has been a balanced show all year long. He doesn't do too much. He doesn't stand in the way of his teammates' growth and their abilities, and he's an excellent orchestrator, and he's just getting started. I mean, he really is. His potential to me is super sky high. He does have the athleticism. The shot's a big question, no doubt, just like it was for Rose. And ultimately, that could be just much more difficult to sustain in 2026 than it was when Rose won his, if it was 2011. I mean, a lot has changed in that time period. So that could be a deal breaker. I'm just saying keep him in the mix, because if they're winning lots of games, he's going to have a chance. Now, at the same time, you know, a guy like CP, you know, I don't think he's ever going to be as good as Chris Paul. Chris never won one. And so that's probably the best counter
here. A crime. An absolute crime, by the way. He should have won in 2008.
Interesting. Really?
Yeah. No, go back and look at the numbers. That was Kobe's one MVP. And Chris Paul was the best player that season.
Yeah, it's tough, man. These are difficult awards to win, so we should be underscoring that. We're listing like 15 guys who have a mix. You know, bottom line is like four of these guys are ever going to win even one. It's like that's how competitive it is. Okay, give me your other blind spot, though. I didn't hear any rookies in your list, and I didn't hear any current college or high school players in your list. Now, the high school thing I totally understand, because that means you have to like really hit the ground running within 5 years. It's like your third season, you're winning MVP. That's probably not going to happen. But what about this loaded college class, Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, Jalen Suggs, Jalen Green? Everybody's hyping these guys up. Even from this current class, you've got LaMelo, Anthony Edwards, probably not James Wiseman, we can say. You didn't consider any of those guys for your group?
So a few of them cracked my honorable mention list here, but I mean, like, I have Cade Cunningham here. He's going to be 24. LaMelo, 24. Anthony Edwards, 24. It's just tougher to win the MVP when you're that young. Like, I think they're all really talented players with bright futures, but in the 2026 season, when Luka is his age and you know, Trey is in his prime and Tatum's in his prime and Bam, etc., like, I just think all those guys will be better. And so it's just like, it's so hard to project just how much like what the trajectory is going to be for someone like Anthony Edwards, or let alone Kate Cunningham, who I've literally never seen play basketball, so I'm not going to put him on my list. I don't mean to be disrespectful in any way to any of those guys. I think they're awesome and have bright futures, but no, there's just too many other talented young players who I'm already familiar with, who I've already seen and I'm confident will get better and have really dominant seasons when they're in their prime, where I couldn't put them on the list.
Totally understand. From that group, who did you give the longest look to? I think for me it was probably LaMelo or Cade.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're kind of right on the money in terms of where they stack up. Like, even LaMelo, like, LaMelo versus Luka in 5 years, I feel like that's still going to be pretty clearly Luka, you know? And
yes,
so it's going to be hard for him to kind of overcome it. That's even positional designation, let alone like overall MVP conversation. With Cade, if he's supposed to be the next Harden, I mean, it took Harden a long time to get an MVP, you know? It was a bunch of close calls and just, you know, diligent work year after year after year. So that feels more like a late 20s thing than like an arrive on the scene and immediately, you know, sweep the NBA off its feet. So I'm with you. How did you rank those guys, though?
I mean, I didn't really necessarily have them in any particular order, but I'm going to throw – can I throw a name at you that's a little older, but like – I don't know. I think he'll surprise you a little bit.
Is it Donovan Mitchell? Because he's your biggest snub right now.
No, Donovan Mitchell is. I have Donovan Mitchell in the 29 category with Devin Booker. De'Aaron Fox, also another honorable mention if he leaves Sacramento. And let me see if I have. And, you know, you mentioned Shea, who's going to be 27 that year. And I have Shea over someone like Ja Morant, just from everything that I've seen with Shea. Like, I know he's going to be able to hit step back threes in 5 years. I know that he's going to live at the free throw line. His game is just so silky and not dependent on athleticism. And I'm looking at the Oklahoma City Thunder, and like, I assume that they're going to throw the max at him. I know that they're going to throw the max at him. And then they have a million draft picks. Like, that team could be extremely good at 2026. So,
yeah, it's just going to be tough, like him or Poku, you know? Like, two MVP candidates. Could they split the vote that year, Michael? It's possible. Don't let the Clippers executives hear this podcast. You know, if they traded away Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, future MVP, to grab Paul George, oh boy, that's going to be regrets. That would be wild if that's how that story turned out. I don't know if I see MVP potential from him, but All-Star is coming, you know, within the next couple of years for Shai. You're way too low on Ja, man. Your homework for this weekend, Michael, after this great homework assignment that you just turned in on this episode, is to really try to go appreciate my guy Ja just a slight bit more, okay?
I'm sorry. No, you're probably right, and I already feel bad with some
good
of the things
you
that
should.
I said.
No, yeah. Like, you should. I mean, I could sit over here and be like, no, Michael, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Like, let it roll off your back. I don't feel that way. I think that you should feel pain on that one, and you should use it to correct your behavior going forward. I kid. Who else did you have, you know, final snubs to wrap up this conversation, or other guys you were trying to surprise me with?
So this player, I was very, very close to putting in my top five, and I just kind of chickened out at the end. But it's Michael Porter Jr.
Wow, interesting one. I was looking at him a little bit too. The argument is what? Just NBA scoring leader on a good team?
Porter will still be on. I think he could be the best player on a team with Jokic. That sounds sacrilegious, but he'll be 4 years. Is 4 years younger. He'll be 27 in his prime. I think based on what we've kind of seen with Michael Porter Jr. over the past month or so, this dude is ridiculous offensively, and especially since, you know, he's gotten a little bit more responsibility with Jamal Murray out. Like, the sky is truly the limit for him offensively. And we've talked about his defense. I assume that that will just get better and better. He's super athletic, makes ridiculous plays, at the rim, chase down blocks, that sort of thing. Once he kind of gets better awareness on the defensive end and he's able to kind of have that complement his athleticism, and he's already just this this walking flamethrower from behind the 3-point line. Like, he already hit shots where it doesn't matter how closely they're contested or how his body is positioned. If shoulder's not even facing the backboard, I just expect his threes to go in already. So I think he'll always be on a winning team given the pieces around him and the culture that's already established in Denver. And yeah, man, like, assuming he stays healthy, because we've got, you know, a track record that's unfortunate with some back injuries and surgeries earlier in his career when he was in college, et cetera. If he is able to stay healthy, he is going to be an absolute force for years to come.
I hear you on that. I cannot wait to see how many shots per game he averages against the Lakers in the playoffs, if that's the matchup they get, because he's going to understand that's a big stage, and he's going to go for it. He's got a lot to gain, you know, from a career and reputation standpoint, having a big series, you know, heads up against LeBron and AD. That would be, you know, something I've got circled already here, you know, a month out. Let me just ask you quickly, what held back Ben Simmons? I know it does kind of seem like a joke question, but I mean, number one overall pick, you know, he's putting himself in the defensive player of the year conversation, still very young, hasn't had the chance to carry his own team. You know, like, is there some Ben Simmons finally breaks through and gets it on his own team, averaging 20 points and 8 and 8? And
I don't ever see that happening. I don't. There's nothing he has done has shown that he's going to make some sudden improvement. It just, that's kind of what it is with him. And you listen to interviews with him when he talks about his game and how critical he is of people who have not played basketball at a professional level and don't understand the game. And it's like, I do understand the game. And if you want to win MVP, you can't average 12 points a game. That's just, it's not going to happen. I'm sorry. And so there's been a reluctance his entire career to shoot. Shooting is important. It's going to be increasingly important. And he plays with Joel Embiid. So all of that is stacked up against him. I don't ever see him winning MVP, no.
What about RJ Barrett?
If this was 2024 we were talking about, RJ Barrett would have just been number one on the list. I mean, it's a lock with him. Everything's coming along great. The development, the three-point shot. He's superb now.
is it crazy to think of him ever getting there after the size and scope of his year one to year two jump? I mean, I think it's probably crazy, but I'm just, you know, tossing out a couple names to make you think.
I do think it's a little out there, not going to lie. He never crossed my mind for this exercise once. So I don't think that he's going to contend for MVP. But, you know, he's a third overall pick with a really nice pedigree. So who knows?
Josh Jackson. No, I'm playing. Any other final names before we get out of here, Michael?
No, that does it for everybody I wrote down here on my list. I feel like I'm potentially missing, like, I feel like people are going to listen to this episode and be like, where is Kyrie? Where is, I don't know. Like, did we miss any, like, established stars who could still be really good in 2026? Or do you think we kind of...
It's kind of tricky.
Everybody?
It was like, look, if LeBron's not going to be able to get one in his mid to late 30s, then why are we assuming that any of these other guys can? You know what I mean? Like,
Great point.
All of the built-in advantages that he has from a fame standpoint, from a market standpoint, from, you know, an all-time great standpoint, you know, putting up monster stats year after year after year, and yet he was still getting, you know, outpolled by Harden in his prime, Westbrook in his prime, you know, Steph Curry twice in his prime. And so it's trickier to see somebody like, you know, Kevin Durant, age 35. It's like a career achievement MVP. We're going to give it to him. Like, that could happen. But I think at that point, he'd be like 37 in 2026. So that's not going to happen, right?
Winning MVP is very, very hard. Like, KD has won MVP. Kobe has won MVP. Shaq has won. Dirk has won. It's really not easy. It's the most prestigious award in the league for a reason. And, Yeah, I don't really know what point I'm trying to make, but
no, well said. No, you're right on the money, and that's why I go back to like just top end talent of the guys who I really bank on in this exercise. So I would say to me, it's Luka one. I actually think Anthony Davis might have gotten a little bit underrated on your list because I still think he's going to be that one older guy who could really sneak in. I wouldn't write off Jokic either, but I'm not sure I'd have him as like my top five most likely. Especially if he wins one this year, I do think it's going to make it harder for him in the future to win additional ones. I would keep Zion and Tatum in the mix. I would for sure keep Bam in the mix. And I would get Ja through your thick head, Michael, okay? Get him on that list too.
Is Ja in your top five?
No, he wasn't. He was one of my honorable mention. But I'm laying it on thick here to try to shift the bounds for future conversations when Ja breaks through. And I've got to make sure that you own up to the hatred that they're going to be putting on that whiteboard there in Memphis. Well, Michael, I do want to thank you again, all jokes aside, all poking and prodding aside, for the awesome research that you put into coming up with this list. I think that some of the names were obvious, but some of these debates that came out of it were a little bit surprising. And it's fun to imagine where the league is going right now, because we've had an awesome generation of guys in that, you know, age 30 to 33 window at this stage of their careers to watch them come up the last 10 years and reach their peaks and do amazing things. And we've got a whole generation of guys coming up behind them that are really going to own the league at that point in 2026. And it's going to be fun to watch them too once they get there. And some of those guys, you know, even like Trae Young that we were talking about, have ceilings that we probably don't spend enough time thinking about when we're going through our day-to-day lives. So I hope that got you guys thinking out there in the open floor globe. Who did we forget? Who did we snub? Who did we overrate? openfloormail@gmail.com, openfloormail@gmail.com. Now, you can follow Michael on Instagram and Twitter at Michael Villas and Victor Pina. Don't forget, he wrote a big thing about Bam this week for Sports Illustrated. Check that out. It was awesome. Good read, Michael. I loved it. As always, I'm with you. I think you love Bam more than just about anybody, but I'm like Bam lover adjacent, I would say. Like I'm kind of almost as close. You know, I'm in the same general zip code and vicinity. You guys can follow me on Instagram at Ben.Golliver, on Twitter at Ben Golliver. Be sure to find our page on Apple Podcasts by searching for Open Floor. That's two words. When you get there, scroll down. It will say rate and review. Tap five stars. It's just that easy to help us spread the word. Michael, we're going to be back next week. I imagine we're going to be debating some real awards. It's probably about time for that All-NBA conversation we've been teasing for a while because we're getting here to the end of the regular season. I look forward to that as well. And guys, don't forget, Bubble Ball, you can pre-order it now. My book is on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever else you get your books. It comes out on Tuesday, and I am so excited. I can't wait to have that out in the real world, Michael. It's been quite a journey. All right, until next week, I will talk to you.
Back soon, Ben.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Check the backseat. Check the backseat.
All right, come here.
Check the backseat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the backseat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. All that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.